So for us, that's the definition of ready to implement.
Thanks, David. We have a question that actually has to do with the webinar that we had last time, and this is directed towards you, Mark. So the question is asking, mobility was one of the two tracks in last year's civic solicitation, but it is not explicitly listed in this year's two track. However, in the webinar that we had on February 25th, Mark, you talked about a lot about mobility. So is there a mobility lens over the resources and equity track for this round of seven?
Yeah, so as we looked at this round of Civic, we really thought that mobility is something that could lend itself to either track. So I would say present us your story, your idea, and how mobility fits into that. And we're anxious to see your ideas again, where we're not trying to put on tight guardrails to say, it has to include mobility, or if it does include mobility, it's certain forms of mobility. So it's really about presenting your idea to us.
Thank you, Mark. Next question I'll direct to you, Kate. What support is offered to stage one teams once awarded to help them get ready for implementation?
So MetroLab does a few things to the teams that are stage one awardees. We develop a community of practice, which includes providing a expert network that you can talk to. So those in the field around the country who have done similar pilot implementation, you can speak with them. We do peer-to-peer sharing. We do roundtables, so you can hear how other teams are going. And we do several workshops. And these workshops include things like how to use your data for the pilot, shareholder analysis and working with partners, and aligning on research and practice questions. So there's quite a few things and resources once you're a stage one team.
Thank you, Kate. Next question I will direct to David Alexander. David, we have a question that's asking, would it be recommended for proposals to have a technical or technological contribution, or would community engagement and planning innovations be considered sufficient for research tasks in the climate change?
Sure, thank you. So I think our perspective is that we look at technology from a very broad lens. So technology may mean different implementing new approaches and practices. At the same time, it could mean implementing more material-based or information technology-based solutions. So we're encouraging communities and partners to really be creative in terms of what they're proposing against that topic and track.
Thank you, David. Next question I'll direct to you, Mikhail. What type of projects have previously been funded by Civic?
Sure. So the best way to find that out is to go to the website that we had up previously. And Vishal, maybe you can just put that up one more time for people to see. So it's nsfciviciennovation.org. And you can find a page there on the projects from our stage one and stage two from the first round of the program with lots of interesting information and also websites for many of the teams.
Thank you, Mikhail.
Yes. So Vishal, can I add one more thing on that?
First, David.
One of the things that you'll see there is that there's a fairly large geographic distribution of stage one and as well as stage two projects. Just because a region has received a stage one project or stage two project in our previous competition doesn't mean at all that you shouldn't consider, hey, let me build a stage one project for this year in that geographic region. We're looking for great ideas, great partnerships, not, oh, we funded this location already.
Great point. Thank you, David. I'll stay with you, David, for this next question. So we have a question that's saying, you know, they're curious about the timeline of the program, which seems shorter than, you know, normal NSF grants. So can you talk about that in terms of, you know, the proposals, the review process, and how phase, you know, stage one and stage two relate to each other? And can you also clarify what the starting timeframe would be for stage two? It seems that there's only 4 months for stage one before proposals for stage two are due. So can you go over these?
Sure. CIVIC is really viewed by us at NSF, as well as our federal partners, as something different from the usual NSF solicitation, where a project will last for two, three, or four, or five years before it actually may have an impact on that, on society. When we created CIVIC several years ago, we were looking for, one, how do we accelerate that transition? And two, many of our three-year projects are on the order of about $1 million. So our view was, let's really look at how can we accelerate that impact with roughly the same level of funding. And instead of looking for projects that are creating fundamental research itself, look at how are these projects going to be applying research artifacts, research-based pilots, not doing the fundamental research, but using those pilots and impacting those communities, not in 3 or 4 years, but over a 1 year plus horizon. The nominally, I believe, stage one will begin roughly October 1st, roughly fall of 2022, I guess. It'll be followed by a solicitation for the stage two with proposals due, I believe, sometime in February of 2023. Yes, we recognize that it isn't a full 6 months before you put together your proposal. But at the same time, what we hope to see is partnerships that have not just been created specifically for CIVIC. Partnerships like CIVIC requires take time to gel. And we give you 6 months, 4 months before you turn in the proposal to really refine your concept with your CIVIC partner and look at how do you bring in additional partners, bring in additional capabilities so that in the 12 months that would follow the start of stage two, you would have a pilot that can be demonstrated and have impact within the community. It's really accelerated impact, and CIVIC is not for everyone.
Thanks a lot, David. Next question, I will direct to Yo-Yo. Yo-Yo, we have a question that's asking, does the CIVIC project have to be a new pilot, or can it be a continuation of past work?
If it was a pilot at a different scale in the past, and now you are expanding the effort to engage, maybe making broader impact to, or apply it to a different geographic area of different natures that brings new challenges for your team to work on, I would say yes, that would be appropriate.
Thanks, Yo-Yo. Mikhail, I'll ask you the next question. So if one of the partners on the project is international, is that okay? And does it make a difference? There are only 1 to 20% of budget or project equity. So what are the rules around compensation of partners?
Right, so we outline in the solicitation that you could have international partners, but you cannot direct funds to your international partners from the NSF fund. So if they want to come with their own funds, then you can do that. That would be fine. So if that enhances your project and you can work that out, then that's okay, but no funds from NSF or from the program, I should say, the joint NSF DOE DHS funds.
Thanks, Mikhail. Next question I'll direct to Sarah Kuzman. We have a question that's asking, civic sector partnerships and community roles seem to be a big focus of the program, but how important is it for teams to have more conventionally academic partners? So for example, university faculty, how important are these partners in implementation of any civic research activity?
I'm sorry, I couldn't hear the, is the question.
I can repeat the question if you want.
Is it on Q&A? I don't see it, I'm sorry.
So I'll just ask the question again, Sarah. The question is asking, Civic has a focus on, yes, partnerships with the civic sector, you know, community partners are a big focus of the program, but how important is it for teams to have, you know, conventionally academic partners, so university faculty?
Oh, yes, I think it is important to have a partnership of academic researchers and community partners. But by academic, we also include nonprofit researchers who are, professional scientists. Even if they don't work at a university, they could be at a nonprofit. That would be fine.
So, Vishal, can I add one thing?
Sure.
On that question, what we really want teams to do is, hey, you've got civic partners, look beyond just your traditional tier one universities. You may have local universities that you work with. They may be community colleges. Those are also eligible to support this. They could be minority serving institutions. So look at how can you leverage the academic strengths that one may help you write a more compelling proposal. Sadly, NSF proposals aren't exactly easy to write. And having an academic partner can make that process from an administrative side easier to do.
Thank you, Sarah, and thank you, David. Next question I'll direct to Mikhail. So we have a question that's asking, you know, they're not sure if a project fits better for the Civic program or for another NSF program called Smart and Connected Communities. Can teams submit a 1-2 pager or talk to an NSF representative about which program is a better fit for their project idea?
Yeah, sure. We definitely welcome people submitting to us their project idea. Doesn't necessarily have to be as long as 2 pages. It can just be a couple paragraphs. It'll be fine. We can set up a time to speak with one of the program directors. The best way to do that is to email the program team at civic@nsf.gov. And we can find a time to speak with you.
Thank you, Mikhail. Next question I'll direct to Kate. Kate, will MetroLab tailor the expert networks for the community of practice activities in stage one to the specific teams who are chosen, or will everyone in stage one have access to the same network?
They are tailored. It's a tailored list of experts after the that are specific to the projects. And each team gets two opportunities to engage with that network. Given the short time frame of stage one, it's typically been once during stage one and then an additional reach out to the expert network in stage two, but it is tailored.
Thank you, Kate. Next question I'll ask Yo-Yo. Technology solutions seem to be a large part of the funded projects from the last round of Civic. Is a technology solution required for a team submitting the Civic program?
The short answer is no. Keep in mind that your team has to convince the reviewers and the Civic team within NSF that the pilot will actually make a direct impact. So technical solutions tend to have a clear outcome for people to assess, right? But if you have creative, innovative ideas for new process, a new decision formation or partnership, and that could actually help either tracks, either one of the track in Civic Challenge, we would welcome your idea. And then if you have specific questions, feel free to reach out to any one of us.
Thanks, Yo-Yo. Next question I'll direct to you, Mikal. Are health-related outcomes, so for example, oral health, medical care, emergency services, and research questions along those lines appropriate for Civic?
I think that's just a short answer of yes. Health and wellness does fit. You just have to make the case, again, this just as with any area, how it fits into one of the tracks.
Thank you, Nepal. Next question I'll direct to you, Dan. Are feasibility assessments, infrastructure implementation plans, and or design and planning tools appropriate products for Civic projects?
I think my answer will be yes. I think, again, just echo what others have been said. So it's really up to the team to be creative and also making a convincing argument why those kind of newer designs or newer strategies after the piloting really can have a meaningful impact on the community. So we don't limit the Civic project to, developing a piece of software or a systems, information systems, even though they have been funded in the first round. So in this competition, definitely we're open to anything that's related to technology or focused on something else.
Thank you, Dan. Next question I'll direct to David Corman. David, this question is asking, are planning project as industrial, nonprofits, CBO, and academic partners, would this fall under the GOLI designation, which stands for Grant Opportunities for Academic Liaison with Industry, for this grant?
So my first suggestion is look beyond a GOLI for stage one, of the competition. You know, the stage one activity is really $50,000, bringing a GOLI in for a 6-month planning grant award is a little extra baggage. If you feel in stage two that a GOLI framework is applicable, then hey, it may make some good sense to use that. But certainly for stage one, I would always look at what is the shortest path to submitting a strong, coherent proposal.
Okay, thanks, David. And I'll stick with you for the next question as well. So when can teams who are awarded a civic grant, when can they expect funding to be received? For their planning and budgeting purposes, this team is interested in knowing if there's a time frame for when the 12 months of stage two will begin.
So clearly for stage one, with a May proposal turn in, we would anticipate project starts roughly October 1st with funding from beginning at that date, maybe slightly before. With proposals for stage two that are submitted in February 2023, our commitment is generally that it's a 6-month process between proposal submittal till proposal award. And we would anticipate that those projects would start with FY 2023, 2024 dollars. And so likely start with funding that would be received roughly October of that year. Yeah, and all that is to be determined based on if there are continuing resolutions, et cetera. But our plan usually is, the plan is always 6 months from time proposal submitted to the time award is made.
Thanks, David. Next question I'll direct to Barbara. Barbara, for groups who aren't as familiar with the NSF proposal process, should they somehow use language that speaks to the NSF strategy, building the future, investing in discovery and innovation?
I would say read the solicitation very carefully and then write your proposal to address those solicitation criteria and the goals in the solicitation. What you're talking about right now are broader NSF goals. Okay, yeah, anything that you would do that would actually fit inside the civic umbrella will definitely fit inside those NSF goals. So I would not waste time and energy focusing on things that are not directly related to your mission of trying to provide sufficient information and also provide sufficient justification as to why what it is you want to do and the people that you want to do it with actually fulfill the criteria in the solicitation. So really focus on that. And if you have never written an NSF proposal, let me give you a hot tip. You can go to the NSF award search and you can search on the keyword civic, C-I-V-I-C. And you can pull up the abstracts from awards that have been made previously under the civic program. And the abstract is there. The person who was the person who wrote the proposal's name is there. Their contact information is there. You can call them up and ask them and say like, hey, would you be willing to send me a copy of your successful civic proposal, because I'm trying to, you know, be successful in civic. Many times people will. So that way you can actually get to see what a successful proposal looks like. Now, I'll just tell you right now, not every proposal is the perfect proposal, even if it's awarded. But if you get two or three of these or three or four of these, you can at least have an idea of how you need to talk about what it is that you're going to do that at least in previous times was successful at NSF. And that might help you with your language and how you want to structure your proposal and that kind of stuff.
Thank you, Barbara. Next question, I'll come back to you, David Corman. This team is asking that their stage one proposal will focus on serving a smaller, more specific population. However, for stage two, they're hoping to expand the project to serve a broader community. Should this be communicated in stage one application?
So remember, stage one proposal is all about vision. And so if part of your vision is how you're going to expand it from this, what you saw as a smaller, more specific population to this larger population, it would not be an unreasonable thing to tell us about that.
Thank you, David. And similar question along those lines. I'll direct this to you, Michal. One of the components for a proposal that a team is considering would be a demonstration project that would be implemented in phase two. Does this project have to be fully designed and budgeted for in phase one?
So actually the, I guess what this person who submitted this question is calling a demonstration project. I'm guessing this is really the pilot project. So this is actually the main purpose of this program is to do some kind of demonstration project or some kind of pilot. So it's good that this team is thinking about that. And during your stage one, you want to give enough information that the panel can understand what idea you have for stage two. You can still continue building the details of that during stage one, including refining your project team, figuring out the exact budgeting, but you do need to put forward a pretty clear idea of what you would want to do as your pilot or your demonstration in stage two, and a plan for and a convincing argument that you would actually be able to carry it out in the time frame and with the budget that is allowed.
Thank you, Michal. Next question I'll also direct to David Corman. David, does the federal indirect cost rate apply to stage one and stage two? Does Civic cover indirect costs for academic applicants?
So these are questions you should, these are standard NSF proposals. If you have specific questions on indirect, direct costs, you should be talking to your sponsored research office.
Great. Thank you, David. The next question that we have is kind of an interesting question because it's asking us to differentiate in some ways between the two cracks. So I'll post this to you, David, but I'd also like to get David Alexander and Mark Smith's perspective on this. So this team is asking, can a project fall under both track A and track B? And if so, is there a way to specify that their project falls into both tracks?
So it's actually an interesting question and somewhat of a difficult question. In part, we will be creating panels that evaluate track A, track B proposals separately. One of the things that we are going to ask you is to tell us under which track it should be evaluated. That said, as we look to bring the results of track A and track B together, we may look and say, you know, this really fit well in track B instead of track A. And, you know, based on the discussions across the team, it would be considered for both.
Thanks, David. And I'm also wondering if Mark Smith and David Alexander, if you have anything to add to that in terms of how your agencies are kind of looking at both tracks and how you would differentiate some of the ideas that could possibly fall under both.
Yeah, I think David Corman summed it up very well. It, as long as they're distinctively different in terms of the proposal and the solutions for those particular tracks, I think they would certainly be considered. Always a concern if one applicant is submitting to, you know, two different areas of interest, if you will, that there is differentiation and not just slight tweaks to say, well, it might fit here, it might fit there. I think, you know, there really has to be, you know, a distinctive case made for why that proposal is in track A or track B or proposals in both. I think if they're too similar in nature, I don't think necessarily rules it out, but makes it a bit more harder to differentiate what the real goal and the outcomes, proposed outcomes are of the project.
Yeah, I just concur with Mark and David Corman.
Thank you, everyone. Next question I'll direct to you, Mikhail. For the civic engagement, is there any guidance as to the ideal or desired number of civic partners? Any other guidance as to which civic partners are seen as strategically most important?
Yeah, so this is a really good question. What we want you to think about is your civic partners at various different, for serving, I guess, various different purposes. So you could have your partners who you are your stakeholders, who you'd be reaching out to get the perspective of your end users or your residents and those who would really benefit from whatever you're trying to implement. You could think about the civic partners who would be the champions for your project. And if it was successful, they could help carry this through to scaling it and sustaining it beyond the life of the award. And so kind of along with that, who would be the civic partners who may ultimately also need to be engaged and kind of know about this as well so that they can kind of have buy-in and help shape it. So think about all those different pieces as you're putting together your proposal, and the panelists certainly do look for involvement of these civic partners at these who serve those different types of roles.
Thank you, Mikhail. Next question I'll direct at David Corman. Who should be included as collaborators in the collaborators and other affiliations information section of the proposal? So for co-PIs that are community partners and therefore non-academics.
So one has to be very specific on who are real collaborators in those in specific activities. If typically what those are used for are, I've written a paper with such and such, or I've had an ongoing NSF or DOE or DHS project with this individual. It really is meant much more for that level of detail rather than, I plan to be working with them in the future. So it's really, who have you worked with in the past, very specifically? Who have you, if you've received funding from them, and if you've published together? And I'll tell you something that seems always silly to us as we tear apart the proposals. It looks like you get 15 pages to provide those answers. And I've never seen anyone use more than a couple. And when it's submitted, it's still 15 pages.
Thanks, David. Next question I'll direct towards Sarah Kiesler. Sarah, we have a team who's asking if focus on the intersection of data privacy and racial equity be competitive for funding. Specifically, this team has an idea for a project that implements a city's data privacy guidelines and at the same time works towards eliminating algorithmic bias and digital discrimination.
Yeah, it sounds like you have two goals that have important values that reviewers and we would welcome, but I don't hear what it is you would actually do. And I actually don't think that simply developing guidelines would represent a significant innovation. It would have to be some way of actually implementing privacy, data privacy, data sharing, and perhaps better processes for avoiding algorithmic bias that you think that you see, but just working on guidelines that don't think others may differ, but it doesn't, it sounds more like value goals, but doesn't sound like a project that might compete with others.
Thank you, Sarah. The next question I'll direct to Mark Smith, but others also feel free to chime in if they have additional perspective to share on this. So Mark, in the previous round of awardees for the Civic Mobility Track, based on the awardee list on the website, teams that moved on to stage two, 6 out of the 6 projects focused on developing mobile apps or deploying some sort of micromobility solution. Based on this pattern, would it be accurate to say there is a preference for physical technology fixes that have an immediate, visible, and tangible impact, as opposed to solutions that emphasize gradual process improvements via new analytical tools and data, which typically happens on a slower timescale with less tangible real-world outcomes?
Yeah, so I think the short answer is probably a mix of both. What we were looking for with the last round of Civic was, what are some of those solutions that help bridge those mobility gaps between home, work, jobs, school, healthcare, et cetera. And realizing that there is some of that research and data analytics that has to take place. So I think we understand that that's an important part of it, but then wanting to see how then that actually transfers to some sort of real world applications through validating those technologies or some sort of demonstration project to show how that works to help improve affordable, accessible, clean transportation.
Thank you, Mark. Next question I will direct to Mikhail. Mikhail, what is the actual page limit for the stage one proposal project description? It was just mentioned as 15, but this audience member believes that they had read 7 pages in this description.
Right, so it's 7 pages for the project description for the stage one proposals. It's 15 for stage two. And I think David may have been referring to a different section when he said 15 pages. I think that was the collaborators section. So right. It is, it's 7 pages. And you are correct. So that we're glad to see you were reading the solicitation carefully.
Thank you, Mikhail. Next question I'll direct to David Alexander. And before I get into this question, folks, I just want to remind you, we have about 13 minutes left in the Q&A session. We are approaching all the audience questions that have been asked. If you have any additional questions to ask, I would encourage you to go ahead and do that now. So just a reminder as we approach the end of the session. So moving on, David Alexander, we have a question that's building on the question that someone asked earlier about both Track A and Track B. This team is writing a health and wellness oriented pilot program to serve individuals in Northern California who have experienced multiple catastrophic megafires and still live in a fire prone area. The proposed project would build resilience and mitigate future impacts of wildfires, but also simultaneously fill the enormous gap in mental health resources. So, it would meet both ends of Track A and Track B. What guidance would you have for this team?
I think, again, as we've noted, you really need to look at the descriptions for the research tracks. think deliberately about how your research proposal will support either one of those tracks. But also be cognizant, as David Corman mentioned, that you know the panels will take a hard look at the proposals and may make additional recommendations for the sponsors. So I mean that's our general guidance.
Can I jump in here and add something?
Yeah, of course, Sarah.
Yeah, I guess I would recommend focusing more on mental health, for example, or some other kind of resilience, such as schooling or wildfire avoidance in housing. So the funding for even for the second phase isn't enough to do, you know, to solve all of Northern California's problems. And so I think something focused that it builds on research and has a lot of potential for application right now would be something you could have sort of a more convincing proposal.
Thank you, Sarah. So it looks like we have one additional question that just came in. I'll direct this to you, David. Is the cover page included in the 7-page requirement for the project description? Is the cover page same as the 1-page summary of the other NSF proposals required?
So make sure you include a 1-page summary. That is for us, that's a sacred thing. Our system looks for a 1-page summary, followed by, in our case, as long as I have to look in specifics at the solicitation, but if it says a 7-page project description, the project description is limited to 7 pages in length. That does not include the 1-page project summary. NSF proposals typically don't have a cover page. A big thing to think about is make sure that it is compliant with what one expects to see. And again, these are NSF proposals. They're different than many people are used to submitting. Especially if you're an NGO, you're used to submitting a different style proposal. Read through the solicitation. If you have a question that's specific, put it in the, send it to the email address that I think Vishal had mentioned before. One last thing, which is, I'm very general remark. We give some very detailed questions in the proposal description for the planning grants. What are we really interested in hearing about? Your planning grant is really a story. And it's a story about your vision, what you hope to achieve in stage 2, and how you will get there as you execute stage 1. We want you to talk to us a bit about scalability, transferability, sustainability, and impact. These proposals are all going to be evaluated by a panel. Multiple panels. There'll be many, many, many panels. Those panels will include people from technology, people from the social sciences, and people from the civic community. They're going to be reading those proposals and thinking to themselves, were they in that community? How would this proposal impact them? So think about it as you write the proposal, your own life's experiences and the questions that a reviewer of those ideas that you put would react. So be very, very conscious of the questions we ask. Submit to us a good creative proposal. We're very, you know, the specific areas for track A and track B are really quite broad, but make it easy on the reviewer that they can find the information that they're looking for. And that way, one, it ensures that the story that you tell us gets read the way you intended it.
Thanks, David. We have one more question that just came in. I'll stay with you, David, for this one too. Does nonprofit mean a 501c3 organization can be a submitter of a civic proposal?
Is that for me?
Yeah.
Yes.
Simple enough. Okay, so we are at 3:55 p.m. So we still have about 5 minutes left in the session, but it looks like we've gone through all of the audience questions. I'll give it another minute in case anyone has any last minute questions. But while we wait for, you know, any other questions to come in, I'm just going to bring up the title slide again, just to remind folks that, you know, you can always visit our program website, nsfciviciNnovation.org, where you'll find lots of useful information, including FAQs, information about past and ongoing civic awards. I'll also refer you again to the program webinar that was held on February 25th of Who's Recording. You can also find on the webpage. If you have any other questions that come up along the way, you can always reach out to us at civic@nsf.gov, and we'll do our best to answer your questions there. There's also another Q&A session that is coming up on March 22nd. We already saw that, you know, several teams have started thinking about the types of ideas that they have for their projects. So one of our goals for the March 22nd Q&A session was that, you know, as you develop your ideas further, you'll get the opportunity to interact with members of the civic program team to, you know, ask questions about them. So we actually just had another question come in, and I'll direct this to you, Mikhail. This question is asking, scalability, transferability, sustainability are mentioned specifically to include in the full proposal. Should these components also be mentioned in stage one?
So you don't need to have, we're not looking for a section specifically on that in stage one. What you do want to make a case for is that your project is not just a point solution. So we are looking for projects that do have the potential to be transferred elsewhere and scaled. So as you're thinking about a project that's appropriate and how to describe it, I would suggest putting it in those, making sure first that you actually are selecting a project that has that potential, and then making that come clearly across, but you don't need to describe your plans for scaling, sustaining, and transferring.
Thank you, Nicole. Okay, folks, looks like we're approaching the end of the Q&A session today. I just want to thank everyone for joining us today.